Hi, Tamara. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you so much. It's so good to see you again.
Yeah, it's really good to have you back. How have you been?
Good, really good. I feel like summer just flew by, though. I can't believe it's already October. Yeah.
It did, like fall is here.
I know. It's weird. I want September back.
I know. Well,
one more time.
Yeah, September was really, really beautiful, but I love fall.
Oh, that's nice. It's cozy.
Very. Get your candles out and your sweaters on and the changing of the leaves. So really nice.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
So on today's episode, we're going to be talking about dissociation. And this is, it's an important topic when we're talking about its relationship to trauma. And I was telling you just before we started recording that I had not even known what it was or what I was experiencing had a name. And so I think we can talk about that. So that might be able to help people understand a little bit more about dissociation. So let's start with, and it's a big question, but what is dissociation?
Dissociation, the way I think of it, is that it exists on a continuum of normal to excessive. So normal dissociation, the classic example is you're driving down the freeway and you miss your exit. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait, how come I'm 2 miles away from where I was supposed to turn off? That's like one classic example. And dissociation that can also encompass things like daydreaming, feeling spacey, feeling kind of out of it. And then more severely, when dissociation can become problematic, it's when it involves, and I can say more about this, but just to introduce it, it involves things called amnesia, derealization, depersonalization, identity confusion, and identity alteration. And the way I think about dissociation is, because I obviously see a lot of people who have dissociation, is it works until it doesn't. Dissociation is a really important defense that we need when our systems are overloaded, particularly during child or developmental trauma, but adults too. In fact, I had an experience a year and a half ago where I got assaulted and I was running. I'm fine, minor injuries, but still it was deeply unpleasant. And I was running and it was like, if I look back on that incident, it was like I teleported from one block to the next because I don't remember how I got there. I just like, because the person was chasing me. So I was like running and trying to figure out how to get my phone to call 911 and everything. And I blacked out. I mean, I just dissociated because my system was so overwhelmed. I was so scared. So that's what happens. But the more minor forms of it, I think it's important to remember some of the minor forms of it. Not only are they normal, there's some research that people who are like daydreamers, they may be more intelligent. I mean, we don't know. There's limited data. But so you have to think of dissociation as a really complex phenomena. I think that it should never be pathologized unless the client, the person, feels it's something they want to work on. And there's a lot of important things about how it protects us and how it keeps us safe.
Yes. Yeah. And you mentioned a word, amnesia. And again, I think that's probably on a spectrum as well. But a lot of people have gaps who've had trauma or childhood trauma, a lot of gaps not remembering maybe big parts of their childhood.
Yeah.
And is that because perhaps we were in a state of dissociation?
I'm not sure. I mean, dissociation is complicated because we're really dealing with the nature of consciousness itself, right? Mm. Which is not really well understood. But I'll tell you how I think about it. I know that phenomena you're describing. So many of my clients don't remember anything until high school. Some call it, some not until college, really. It's just like fragments and shards of fragments.
Yes.
I think that, yes, it could be that people are dissociating, but also intense anxiety is so distracting that it's difficult to lay down memories. So think about the last time you were really anxious. How well do you remember what was going on, right? I mean, when we're really anxious, we can't think. And so it's hard to take in what's happening in our environment. And during trauma, right? And dissociation, I should mention, dissociation is more common in betrayal trauma. And so betrayal trauma is when we are abused by someone we need, by a caretaker, someone we love. And so the other thing to think about with dissociation is we can't, if we're being abused by a caretaker, we can't fully let that in because we need them and we can't escape. So dissociation is an escape when there is no escape. We can't leave. We're trapped with the person. So we leave our minds and our bodies in order to, it's a way of keeping yourself alive psychically.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is brilliant. And I've talked to all kinds of people, and I even have friends who have dissociation on more of an extreme level of experiences with extreme trauma, extreme abuse, some with DID. And they don't see it as, they see it as just this beautiful way the body protected them. And I agree so much. And I know that animals, in a way, do this when they are threatened. They go into like a kind of a shutdown. I even heard that they go into a place where they don't feel like if they're about to be eaten alive, which makes me happy because I'm such an animal lover, that they go into this place that kind of disconnects them so they don't feel as much.
That's really interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I've heard that. I can't tell you if it's 100% accurate, but I'm taking it because I like it.
Right. Well, but it makes sense, right? All of us animals have nervous systems.
Yes.
Right?
That's right.
Fight, flight, freeze, right?
Yeah, and you see the animals when they're in a state of freeze, like we are. Yeah. Just totally, yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I've also noticed, let's say with people who have had complex trauma and their childhoods were overwhelming, terrifying, scary, and it was repeated. So you were talking about that. They had to leave. Their bodies left. And it does, this is where I think it can create problems for you, because it goes with us into adulthood. We don't expect that. We think, okay, well, we outgrew our childhood, so that's gone. And then suddenly, we're like, why is this happening? I know that was the story with me.
Yeah, yeah. It's, again, I think that there can be good aspects to it. I always joke, if you can use dissociation in a way that protects you, then it's okay. Like, you're in a meeting with a really aggressive boss, and you're making eye contact, and you look like you're listening, but you're completely somewhere else. I'm like, that is such a great use of dissociation. Good for you, you know?
Unless they start to ask you questions. Then
right,
you're like,
and then, right. And then you're like, wait, okay, I got to come back real quick. yeah, I mean, because the body doesn't, what happens, okay, so a few things. The body, as you well know, with trauma, with complex trauma, it takes the body a long time to learn when it is safe. And in complex trauma, I don't know that people ever achieve a homeostasis of safety. I wish that were true. It's more that there are just ebbs and flows of today's a good day. I don't know why. I mean, and sometimes we just don't know why. It's just like some days are good. Some days you feel more threatened. Who knows? Sometimes people are dreaming about stuff. Stress makes people have flashbacks. So anytime people are more stressed, it's just a trigger.
Yeah.
So, but dissociation, I think, when, again, it's not a problem until it is. And when it becomes a problem, the first biggest thing that I notice with clients I see is, and I think this is true about dissociation in general, is the problem with it is it prevents us from learning from experience.
You say that again?
Yeah. Dissociation prevents us from learning from experience. So think about a young person who's dating, and they're dating a bad actor, somebody who triggers them, but rightly so, because they don't have the person's best interest in mind. They're going to hurt them. They're going to betray them. Maybe they're even aggressive with them. And so then what people will do is they'll just start to check out. And I'll have this with clients where they come in and they'll try to tell me about a conflict with a partner. And I'm like, well, what happened? Can you tell me? And they just don't really remember.
Yes.
And so in relationships, the only way any of us can really protect ourselves is we have to identify that person's not good for me, or that behavior is unacceptable and I need to address it. If we leave the room, we can't protect ourselves. We can't say, wait, I've been here before. I know how this story is going to end. And so that's why it's a little bit like Groundhog Day sometimes with trauma survivors, because they're trying really hard to be connected to people because it's so important. But I think that's one big reason people can miss threatening signs, because if you leave, you don't know you're in danger, right?
Oh, that is such a good point. I mean, I can even remember times where I didn't remember. I know you upset me. I just can't remember how, but you really, really did.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And then sometimes people will come in and they'll be like, I went off on my boyfriend or I went off on my girlfriend. And it's like, okay, but what happened? And they may not have any memory of what the other person did that made them feel unsafe. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's these really egregious things, but, you know, so then they end up trying to kind of fighting or trying to stand up for themselves, but they don't remember the sequence of things. And then they end up feeling really bad about themselves. Mm-hmm. And this is what people will come in and say, like, well, I just went off on my partner. It's like, well, really, let's just try to think about that a bit more. And often you find that the situation is much more nuanced and complicated.
Yeah. And it's the same thing you were saying about anxiety. Like when anxiety happens to us, the prefrontal cortex goes offline and we're not able to be here or pay attention. So I think it's like all of that. I'm wondering if there's any suggestions. Like, I mean, I have a couple. Not that I always practice it, but I know them and sometimes I do. And maybe you can suggest some. I can share what I know.
Yeah, like for how to deal with it?
If there's any, any tips on how to keep you in the room?
Yeah. So there's kind of the long-term approach that I use. And then there's the shorter-term approaches that are really useful in the moment, I think. My favorite, of course, are the dialectical behavior therapy grounding techniques. I just think they're so elegantly simple and they're often overlooked. And these are strategies like, so you just think of your senses, right? So how do you get yourself to feel more connected? Well, a lot of people will say to me, well, I pinch myself to try to feel in my body. And it's like, well, you could do that. It hurts. I mean, pain is one way to do it. But there's other things, like you can bite into a sour fruit, chew on a piece of gum, suck on a piece of candy, look out the window and pick one thing, describe in detail what that is. Mm-hmm. Lavender oil or essential oils, smelling those. In my office, I have a crystal that has jagged edges in it. There's a smooth side and a rough side. And so you can just touch that and feel that. It's stuff like that that I think is really important in mm-hmm. the short term. The longer term approach that I've developed is tracking anxiety, because, and I don't know that this fully explains dissociation, because again, it's a complex phenomena, but I'm just trying to figure out what's the easiest way to treat this, right? And so tracking anxiety, because I think anxiety, when it gets to a point that it's so intense, people fracture and then they dissociate. Mm-hmm. So what I try to have them do is I have them try to pay attention to interpersonal situations, right? Because it's usually interpersonal plus. Yeah. And because we can hopefully remember that and connect with that a little bit more than stuff that happens on our own, where we may not be as plugged in or aware, but focusing on what makes you anxious, because it's often these little things that people do sometimes unintentionally. And it's just so triggering, causes so much anxiety, and then people leave. So I have them track that. And there's a number of dissociation trackers that you can use to sort of like find out what happens before and then how you cope, how you deal with the dissociation. Is it helpful or unhelpful? I think those are some key ways, but those latter things are longer term strategies.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad also that you shared some DBT tools, because I never knew what they were. And they're basically grounding, which is really great, because it puts you back into your body, back into the present. So that's kind of some of the things, like I would have said, look out the window and see if you can, like I have trees in my window, so I can look at leaves and see them moving and just like connecting. Yeah, connecting to something, touching and petting your pet. Those kinds of things, orienting to your room and noticing what's here, right here, right now, those kinds of things. And the other thing which I would mention is if you start to feel yourself before, like just starting to get activated, perhaps walking out of the room and leaving until you're, you know, a little bit more regulated. I don't know. Right. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. I do think that's right. And then doing something to ground yourself. And I think trying to get some perspective by separating yourself, getting some perspective on the situation.
Yeah.
Because I think the place, right, the place trauma survivors always go to is, I'm crazy. I'm crazy. Wait, what's happening to me? I'm overreacting, right? I mean, that's just such a common thing that you hear all the time. I must be overreacting. And a lot of times the person isn't, right? So you want to just try to encourage people to step away and think about the situation. But it's hard, right? Because the thing is this is a general thing, not necessarily related to a dissociation, but it's so important. When we feel terrible about ourselves for all of the things that go wrong in our relationships, it kind of gives us a sense of control. Like, it gives us an idea that we can fix it. And psychologically, that can be so much easier than being disappointed in our partners or being disappointed in our friends. And it sounds silly and simple, but it's not. I mean, being disappointed in somebody you care about can be crushing if you have a trauma history.
Yeah. I've heard someone say that too with regards to betrayal trauma. So that makes sense. Yeah. So the other thing I was going to talk about that I find with survivors of trauma is dissociation. Like we talked about it being on a spectrum. If you have spent a lot of your time in a place where you had to leave your body, and then in the present, let's say there's just a little bit of stress or normal stress, you might find yourself having difficulty staying present. I know that was really the case with me. Much better now, and I think it was complicated in my case too, because there was a little bit of ADHD, ADD, well, they now call it ADHD as well, which mimics and it looks kind of the same. To me, it doesn't matter. It's all whatever. But the thing is that it was still overwhelmed to my system and able to stay. And I think grounding yourself is the most important thing, is to find something to bring you back.
Yeah. And I think I love how you said that about ADD and ADHD, because it's hard to parse out what's what, right? But I think it, in a way, like you say, it doesn't really matter. It's the system is overwhelmed.
Yeah.
The system has trouble organizing, keeping track of things. It's easy to get overstimulated.
Yeah.
So I think trying to focus on those things, becoming aware of when you start to feel overstimulated, and then figuring out a plan of how to take care of yourself, I think is really crucial.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So, and I just like all of these things with the dissociation and just not understanding what's happening, giving language and normalizing it all is so, so helpful.
Yep. Yeah. Because a lot of times people, well, as you started this, you were saying, a lot of people don't understand dissociation. And I would say that a lot of people in my field don't get trained in it. I certainly didn't. Yeah. I mean, I knew what it was, but then in order to write about it and talk about it more, I did like extensive research. I interviewed experts. I read all this stuff. I looked at the different models of dissociation. And I think that actually it was Bethany Brand, who I know has been on your show. It was her research that, and I think this is probably understated, but I think it was her research that said that people with dissociation see 8 to 10 clinicians before they find someone who understands what's going on. And so, again, I think that's another thing for people to keep in mind, because it can feel very shameful to not find a therapist that you connect with, to not find somebody who you feel like understands you. But if it's not a good fit, it probably is because the therapist isn't really trained in what you need. And you just have to keep looking until you can find somebody who understands.
Yes, that's good. Exactly. Yeah. And I've heard the same thing for dissociation.
Yeah.
So is there anything else that maybe I didn't ask you that you would like to share about this topic?
Yeah, I would say a couple of things. So we always think of, when we think of dissociation or when more severe dissociation, people think of DID. But I want to mention also that derealization and depersonalization are two really serious symptoms of dissociation that can cause incredible distress and discomfort. So they're a little bit overlapping in terms of their definitions, but derealization is feeling out of it, spacey, and is feeling out of your body. One example from somebody who had an extreme moment of depersonalization woke up and didn't recognize their partner. So it's being so far removed in really severe cases, you know, depersonalization and derealization, they can be very debilitating. So again, it's just important to find somebody who can help you understand how to deal with that.
People have had, first of all, people are dissociating even in a mild form. Often it is because that has been a defense mechanism, a coping strategy they've learned young. When it's DID, which stands for dissociative identity disorder, used to be called, what was it called before?
Multiple personality disorder.
Right. For that to happen, even the people that I have a friend who has it. I mean, it was severe abuse.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course. Of course. Yeah. But again, I think we don't really know all of the nuances for sure about what causes it. But to say clearly, the data, the best data for what causes dissociation is trauma, hands mm-hmm. down. I mean, there are some other folks who think that there are other causes, but if you look at the data, it's just really clear that trauma and dissociation are linked.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I've ever met or spoke to anyone who has that and hasn't.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So what are your plans? Are you planning on writing more? Because you've written how many books so far?
6.
Yes. And your last one was the time before that was, tell me what it's called again so the readers can...
Oh, yeah. So the last one was the Complex PTSD Coping Skills Workbook. The one before that was the Complex PTSD Combined Theories and Methods.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit more of a denser book on that kind of gets more into the weeds of some of this stuff about like different models of dissociation mm-hmm. and stuff. But that was where it was writing that book that I really had to up my game and learn. Like, I mean, I knew kind of one way of understanding dissociation, and it turned out there's all these other different ways to think about it. Yes. So I learned a lot. I learned a lot writing the book.
And we're so grateful. We're so grateful for people like you that are just changing the way, giving us words, giving us language for our experience.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much again for being with us. I hope you come back.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course. I will put the link to your book in the show notes of the podcast episode and also your website if people are interested in finding out more about you. What is your, I'm going to put it in, but you can tell us what your website is.
Yeah, it's tamara-greenberg.com.
Wonderful. Right.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.